I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. America is not short on museums, particularly in the capital city, Washington, D.C. There's a National Postal Museum. There's a National Building Museum. There's one for natural history, for air and space. And while there are museums that explore American history and people, there is no National Slavery Museum. The politicians there are talking about it. They have been for over 70 years. So the former governor of Virginia says he's going to see to it that a National Slavery Museum is built. And he has the land on the banks of the Rappahannock River in Fredericksburg as a place to start. Governor Wilder says there is still resistance, a deep discomfort about slavery in America. And that's why similar such ventures have stalled. And it's the main reason why he says this museum should be built. Well, others still aren't so sure. They say that dwelling on the divisions of slavery won't do this country any good, that it's more important to look forward. Connection listeners, has America come to terms with its history of slavery? Will a national museum do anything to change the way that slavery is seen and race relations are lived in the U.S. today? Our number's 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. And my guest is the former governor, Douglas Wilder. He was the first African-American to be elected as a governor. He joins us from a studio at Virginia Commonwealth University, where he is distinguished professor in the Center for Public Policy. Governor, welcome to The Connection.
Glad to be with you.
I mentioned a little bit earlier in the program that you are the grandson of slaves. I got that right, didn't I?
That's correct.
Did you ever talk about their experiences in the family when you were small?
I tried to, but my father, being the youngest of his family, didn't like to do it at all. My mother, who was a single child and her parents were not slaves, had to pretty much push him to talk about it. And, you know, the fact that my grandmother and grandfather were sold even while they were married, one going to one port of Virginia, another going to another part, and then only reunited after the war. And the stories about how he would have to slip away without the so-called pass to walk about 20 miles to see his family on the weekends and then to come back and to get the traditional whipping for not being there, and the tricks and things that they had to play. I had to twist it out of my father's lips.
Tell me why. Was he saying, you know, Douglas, this is something we want to forget about, or this is just...
No, he wouldn't even do that. He would just affirm what my mother would say. She would do the recanting.
And he'd just nod, would he?
And he would nod. He would say, yes, yes. So there's a great deal of shame associated with that, and that emanates even till today. People just don't and haven't wanted to talk about slavery because... In American society today, most people want to tell their children that we want to have a better life for you, and we're not going to go through the deprivations of the past. That was then. Now you run into something different. You run into something wherein people consider talking about it, fastening guilt or fixing blame. And there are others who say, well, we don't want to go about it. We don't want to talk about it. Continuing theme is this. Americans know so little about slavery, so little about what took place, that anything relative to understanding what is in fact a part of the American drama is educational. I view what we are doing as educational because I know too few people who know that much about slavery and its effects.
So does that mean in your vision of what the library could be, you actually want to avoid parts of an exhibit which might find blame or foster guilt?
No, I'm not trying to gloss over it nor paint over it like some of the Hollywood versions have been. But nor do we want to ensure, nor do we want to instill in people that to learn about slavery means that you've got to feel guilty, that you've got to feel blamed, that you've got to feel that you had something to do with it. When I think about how little and I don't say this disparagingly at all, but how little America had to do with the Holocaust in terms of any perpetuation of evil or doing anything to cause the harms. And yet we have one of the most successful museums projecting that and portraying that in Washington, D.C. Incidentally, the people at the Holocaust Museum have been most helpful with us in terms of advising and helping to plan and strategize not to repeat some of the mistakes that they made in their planning.
You're not saying that museum shouldn't be there. You're just saying that if that one's there, we should.
I'm saying if that was there, and you tell me that you don't want to know about what took place in a country and what slavery is about, how it affected us, who were the slaves? Who were these people? Were they savages captured in jungles and brought here and then trained to do certain things? Or what was the life like there? Were they citizens in their own realms that had their own difficulties with each other in terms of tribal warfares, etc., taken advantage of by certain people? And I think it's important likewise to show that slavery is worldwide. It wasn't confined just to America. But in addition to this, we want to show that America has risen past and above what it was and how it is still trying to right the wrongs of the past.
See, you're a living example of this, because it wasn't until you were, late 50s, early 60s, and as governor made that trip to Africa, got a chance to see the door of no return on the island of Goree, when some of these questions really started to bang away at you.
I tell you how it affected me, that as we looked through that door of no return on Goree Island, and as you witness this vast ocean with not the slightest bit of land in sight nor anything resembling a place that you could identify, that these were people being taken from their homes and sent various places around the globe. And that I had come back as a descendant of those persons, mm-hmm. and as the chief executive officer of the state where the first Africans were brought. It was just, to me, a gripping panorama of change and a story that needs to have been told, and as to who we were, how we were, and the fact that Africans could rise to the high possibility of the potential of the individual. I think we need to likewise understand who was involved in the slave trade, who were the nations that were involved. To see a slave ship, and this answers your question in terms of the graphic piece, John Hope Franklin, one of our advisors, one of the more eminent historians in the nation, the very first time that I asked him to assist, we were flying over Jamestown Island at the time we were considering Jamestown for the site. And he says, I can envision a slave ship there which would so graphically tell the story, if people knew what it would be like to climb and sit in the area that was designed for the slaves for the 3 to 4 month period of time, only coming up for a period of air on some occasions, sitting in your own filth, your own waste for 2 to 3 months. These are things that when you talk about, oh, yeah, well, that's a little blip. That's something that happened. We are past that. And yet we are not past so much in our society that it's important for the education to take place and then let people make their own minds.
All right, but here's the million-dollar question, Governor. When you set out to build a national slavery museum, are you going to be able to tell a story that everybody can agree is the right story? Or 5 years from now, 50 years from now, are there going to be busloads of children who go, you know, to the Museum of the Confederacy in Richmond, Virginia, to see what that museum says, and then go to the National Slavery Museum in Fredericksburg to see what that museum says? You know what I mean?
I hope that they'll continue to go to all of the museums. Education shouldn't be slanted nor directed. It should be encompassed fully. It is our hope that we will have a national library resource housing the world's largest collection of books and materials on the history of slavery, globally and nationally. We can also serve existing and developing museums with a more regional or local focus. We want a genealogy center with database to research black ancestry, as well as to have a database which would be perpetually open and changing, with inputs from the public as well as outputs from those seeking information without previous generations, here as well as in Africa. We'd like to create transferable content films, references, recordings to travel to schools across the country in both exhibit format and interactive curriculum material that will pique the interest in travel by schools and families that you've described to the museum. So the idea is to help imagine what life was like every day at various points in time throughout 400 plus years.
You mentioned a couple of minutes ago the Museum of the Holocaust in Washington, prime piece of land right on the mall there.
Yes.
And I'm wondering whether or not, if this museum really needs to be built, does it really need to be built in Washington to take that position of stature among the other museums there?
I have not taken a position being in opposition to anything that the planners of that have in mind. They've been talking about it for years, as you know.
Yeah.
I have hoped that since Virginia was the place where it all started, legally, that it would be the place where it would be projected and depicted and shown. And so notwithstanding what may or may not take place in Washington with reference to a memorial, as they are now calling this so-called National Slave Memorial, mm-hmm. that is not in opposition to anything that we are doing. Ours, as I have explained, is far more involved with the development of the education for our youngsters to learn about this nation. I've talked with Congressman John Lewis, who has been very much interested in doing the measure on the mall, and he and I have both agreed we complement each other rather than to be in opposition to each other. There is so little on the issue of slavery. Where would you go to learn about it? Usually, you find in some instances, unfortunately, people who talk about it in the movies, in Hollywood, or the documentaries. Who puts those together, and who determines, as you somewhat alluded, what's right and what's wrong? Let the facts get out there. We have some slave narratives. We have some people who have been, I would say, productive enough to go back to capture the imagination as to what takes place and what should take place.
Governor Wilder, let me just interrupt you if I can. We have to take a short break, and we'll come back after that. Connection listeners with Governor Douglas Wilder, former governor of Virginia, his plans for a National Slavery Museum, and some of the questions that come from why that hasn't been built and what it would look like if it were built. 1-800-423-8255 for you to join us. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. This hour, we're talking with the Honorable Douglas Wilder, former governor of Virginia, about his plans for a National Slavery Museum. We'd like to have you join our conversation. We're going to bring in now Carol Swain, who's professor of political science and professor of law at Vanderbilt University. Connection listeners may remember Carol being on the program talking about her book, The New White Nationalism in America and Its Challenge to Integration. Carol, welcome back.
Good morning. It's great to be back.
I'm interested to know whether or not you think that the National Slavery Museum is a good idea.
First of all, I would like to say that I am a native Virginian. And my family, they were slaves, and it was one of the poor African-American families in Virginia. And I have concerns about who tells the story and how it is told. And when I discuss reparations around the country, I find that often one side is left out of the whole debate, and that's the side that would include information that there were black slaveholders in every state. And depending on the different historical sources, you know, anywhere from 3,000 to 10,000 blacks held slaves themselves, and they were not holding family members. They were in it for profit as well. And usually when African Americans tell the story, they don't talk about the fact that the slave trade, that Africans were involved in that as well. And so I believe that...
So, Professor Swain, are you saying that if the story is told properly, you have no problem with the construction of the museum to do that?
Well, I'm sort of conflicted in the sense that I believe that as African Americans, we need to move forward, and that looking backwards, I don't think it serves a positive. I just think it's that looking backwards would not be positive at this point in time, and I think it also could be detrimental to race relations. A few years ago, when the movie Mississippi Burning came out, there were young African Americans. They saw that film. They saw how blacks were treated in the South during the 1960s, and some of them left the theater and went out and attacked whites.
But you're an educator. You're not saying we shouldn't know what happened in the past because it might cause problems in the present.
No, I'm saying it depends on how the story is told. And as an educator, I don't trust the people, the scholars. I don't trust other scholars to accurately tell the story. There's too much pressure for political correctness. And so if you tell a politically correct version, it's going to be very one-sided. I would have no problem with a version that was balanced. But given what I know about academia, I don't trust people to tell the story accurately. And to get the full effects of it, we have to deal with the fact that there were black slaveholders in it for profit, and there were blacks that fought for the Confederacy, and there were African nations involved in it.
Governor, may I interject?
Yeah,
here?
Governor Wilder, please.
I find this incredible that Ms. Swain is an academe and is saying that she would be in a position to determine what's accurate and what's not accurate, but others would not be. That's the first thing I'm concerned with.
Well, I mean, yes, secondly, I am in academia, and I'm around.
But may I finish,
okay,
please? Secondly, I'm concerned with the fact that you bring up reparations, which has absolutely nothing to do with what we are talking about in terms of...
It has everything to do with reparations.
Well, may I finish again? Which has absolutely nothing to do with the education of what slavery was about. I have pointed out on so many occasions that you might know, and I'm quite certain as an academe you would know, that the very first lawsuit brought to reclaim an escaped slave or one who had been thought to have been manumitted was Anthony Johnson in Virginia, an African who owned slaves. There's no need to hide that. Also, in the middle voyage involvements, when those slaves who were there to train and to fatten and to get the slaves ready to be shipped to the mainland, once they got their freedom, even in the Caribbean, when slavery was forbidden prior to it being forbidden and outlawed in the United States, when that happened, the very persons who wanted to reinstitute it were those Africans. Yes, they are facts. That never should be
hidden. If you tell the story, then it sounds like it's going to be told more accurately than what I hear at academic conferences and what I read written by black
scholars. And that is how the story will be told. I don't want to gloss over the first thing. I don't want to say that, as I said earlier, this is not a guilt-ridden thing. This is not a reparations thing. This is to show that did blacks own slaves? Yes. Did blacks sell each other into slavery? Yes.
Professor Swain, just explain for me, if you can, why you said a moment ago that this is all about reparations.
Well, part of the, across the country, there have been certain resolutions passed to identify companies that somehow profited from slavery. I think that's part of a data-gathering effort to later go after those companies for slave reparations. But I think it's hope that if you make the tragedy of slavery graphic enough that white guilt will rise to the level, and I don't think there's a whole lot of white guilt left, but that it will rise to the level that there will be maybe a fresh movement to compensate blacks for the injustices of slavery. So I see it as part of laying a groundwork for something to come later. And my concern is that the current problems that African Americans have, I don't see that all of those are attributable to slavery, and even if they are, African Americans have to deal with them. I don't trust white people. I don't trust the government to be able to solve black problems. And I think by continually looking backwards and pointing the finger at slavery and saying slavery is responsible for everything that's wrong in black America, it's counterproductive.
And this is the problem that I have encountered, as the question was put to me earlier, in terms of what's going on. This says to me that we don't need to know anything more about slavery because we know all that we need to know.
But you know what would make me feel very comfortable? If we talked about people like Booker T. Washington, look what he was able to accomplish as a former slave, and how if we had followed that model, I don't think African Americans would be in the condition that they're in today.
I think what you're confusing is the present state of African Americans, the reason they are where they are, where they should go from that point, whether they should be paid by anybody. You're confusing that with a data bank of information.
You're confusing that with a database
of knowledge.
I see it.
And
as
you're
part
saying
of
that any exposure of the human mind
is not going to help America. It's not going to solve black problems. To try to resurrect white guilt and black victimization.
Well, see, you have concluded that it resurrects white guilt.
All of this stuff is part of a strategy. One point leads to another. You put out this version of history that you may put it out accurately or you may try. It depends on who else is involved in telling the story, how it's told. That is to lay the groundwork.
Well, I'm quite certain that you were involved.
The governor here, and then we'll take a call. Governor?
I'm quite certain that if you were involved in telling the story, it would be told accurately, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Then no one else could tell it accurately but you?
No, some people could, but I don't trust
that. Well, then
Those people are shut out in favor of political correctness. Who shut them out? Political correctness dominates.
Who is shut out from telling the story as far as the national slavery?
You may remember when the eminent historian John Hope Franklin was in charge of the Clinton, to look at race relations, he immediately said he didn't want to hear from anyone that didn't endorse diversity. I mean, that's how it works. That's how the national debate on race was started, by an eminent black leader that said he didn't want to hear from anyone that didn't agree with him.
Let me step in here for a minute. And Professor, you have one comment in response to that, and then I really would like to bring some of our callers. I'm sorry, Governor, you have one response to this.
My response is that I'm a bit flabbergasted. I was of the impression that I was to appear on the show today to explain to you what we were trying to do in terms of a national slavery museum. I was of the impression that you were going to have callers to call in to give their views and to have their answers. I never intended to engage in a debate. I would say to Ms. Swain, she is entitled to her view. I respect her view. She should never visit any of these museums. She should make certain that these people who are out there doing everything to distort the American picture should be exposed to lump everything together in terms of a right-wing conspiracy, left-wing conspiracy, in my judgment, is unfortunate. I have no problem continuing to answer questions, but I won't engage in a debate.
Let's go to our first call, Louisville, Kentucky. Ebony's on the line. Hi, Ebony.
Hello. In your introduction, you were talking about the discomfort that's surrounded by talking about slavery.
Right.
And I think that's because blacks are made to feel guilty about speaking of it or the long-term psychological and economic effects.
Who makes blacks guilty to speak about it, Ebony? Where does that come from?
Oh, I think
from people like this person just speaking today.
It comes from the media. It comes from people like the professor. And I think that when Jews remember the Holocaust, everyone respects that, as I do. But when blacks remember slavery, it's seen as complaining, and we're told to get over it. And I think that I'm so appalled by her, and I hope that she's not in the African-American, Pan-African Studies, whatever, department, because she seems like she feels guilt over it. It's just, I don't know what to say. But I was in an African-American studies class one year, and we were talking about how blacks were lynched. Well, you know, then the professor says, oh, well, white people were lynched, too. And I'm thinking, where did that come from? I mean, it's fine to tell the facts of what happened, but the whole point is that we need to get the facts out there about slavery. We don't, and I understand her concern about who's telling the story, but as long as you have facts and you might even want people to send in their own personal oral histories from their families.
Ebony, what difference would a museum make as a kind of gathering place or as a showcase for the types of stories and the types of information that you're talking about?
I'm sorry, I didn't get the first part of it.
What difference would a museum make in providing the kind of information, the kind of access that you're talking about?
It would make a difference because it would help young black youth and adults and that professor show how far that we've made it, you know, how far the struggles of our people, that not all of our people had the slave mentality, that we had some strong people. And I think that it would, even for other cultures, it would give them a greater respect for African Americans. Not that I'm asking for anybody's respect, but I think that it will show and help cultural diversity, as the professor said, because people will gain more respect and understand a little bit more of where maybe some of our emotional feelings are coming from. All I'm saying is give blacks the same respect as you give Jews when Jews are thinking about the Holocaust.
Professor Swain, the guilt that...
First I want to say that the professor that said whites were lynched as well, there were whites lynched as well. There were Jews that were lynched. And that my concern, again, is the fact that it depends on who tells the story, that usually, in what I have seen, has been so many distortions and voices, you know, that want to bring a balance. When I teach my courses, I always bring in balance. I bring in readings from different sides, and I bring in speakers with different viewpoints. Most people don't do that. If they disagree with the scholar, they won't even cite their work. And
well,
so
Mr.
that
Douglas,
is my concern.
Mr. Wilder has
that
already said. Mr. Wilder has already said that there is going to be based on facts, and he's going to draw.
He's one prominent person, but one person that's going to be part of a commission.
He's going to be over this. He's going to be a part of this. He's going to have a voice in this. And I think this is great because what I'm going to do, whenever this opens, it's going to be somewhat of a mecca. Every year, we're going to take a pilgrimage to this.
Professor Swain, doesn't somebody have to do it? Doesn't somebody have
there
to say?
There would be a commission. No,
he's got a commission.
There's no commission that deals with what we are doing. This is private. This is state. And this is not a part of any commission.
I'm assuming there will be a commission of people involved in deciding what goes in and what goes out.
You already have a board.
That's an erroneous assumption. There is a board.
Right.
And the board will have a contents committee. It will have an exhibits committee. D.D. Pay, I.M. Pay is the architect who will be meeting with people to determine just what it is we are trying to bring forth. We are going to be copying examples that are put forth by Jacob Decker out of Curacao, who has put $42 million of his own money to tell the story of slavery there in Curacao in the Dutch Antilles. We're meeting with the people in the Smithsonian, with the Underground Railroad people in Cincinnati, all over. But there is no political body that determines what we do. We'll self-govern, self-determine, and we're going to be presenting facts.
Governor, let me go back to the phones. Ebony, thanks for your call. Next to Natick, Massachusetts, Sam's on the line. Hi, Sam.
Hi, how are you doing?
Fine.
Thank you very much to letting me into this anyway. I see this opportunity to challenge every person that listens to put their money where their food belongs or whatever thing it is. That means they should contribute to debate like this and public television or public radio where, you know, the norm is not the political correctness or rightness. Now, I have a question for the professor. Before I even proceed, I will thank Governor Wilder for bringing up this topic, as bad as it is, as ugly as it is, as uncomfortable as it is. You know, I believe the professor is being misguided or misled or probably wants to go from A to B by default by, you know, answering correct or, you know. Now,
let's get to your question, Sam.
When we talk about this, you know, issue, I have never seen one single person that came and opposed when we were building the Holocaust Museum. I never saw one single person who was on record for opposing payment of reparation money to people who were, you know, interned in during the Holocaust.
Sam, what's your question for the professor?
My question is that, you know, you can't move forward without, you know, evaluating the past, looking at the past. You have to look at the past. People, kids have to know. I have a son. You know, I happens to be from, you know, come from, you know, Africa, and even though a U.S. citizen, but come from Africa. And I know that these are the things. My son keep on asking me, if you don't build a museum, how can he know what exactly happened to his, you know, grandchildren?
All right, Sam, you've put it very clearly. Professor Schwent, straightforward question.
I just think it's almost hopeless to try to communicate because people don't really understand what my concerns are and what I'm saying. And what I was trying to say is that it's very important if you do something like that, who tells the story. It does run the risk of worsening race relations, and I think it's part of a larger strategy. And, again, I come from Virginia. I was born 20 miles from Booker T. Washington's birthplace. My family, not only were they slaves, they were totally uneducated. I was a high school dropout. I have worked very hard to earn my degrees, to earn my rank, with almost no help other than what I got from the government.
Professor, quick last question for you, though. If the museum has a group of smart people pulling together.
It's not about being smart, because some of the smartest minds in the world are part of the political correctness movement that's trying to tell what they have a.
So how do you do a museum like this and get it right, a place that you think tells the story in the way?
Independent people. And you may remember when Clinton had this national debate on race, eventually Abigail Thernstrom, a conservative, was added. But this, it took an uproar to get her added. But again, the eminent historian John Hope Franklin announced from the very beginning that he didn't want to hear from anyone that didn't agree that diversity was important. And so we have never had a real dialogue on race in this nation. So that's why I don't trust the people that are out there, the elites, the scholars, the politicians. I know that they're all well-meaning, and I am too, and I have reservations.
Professor Swain, thanks for being with us on the program today.
Thank you.
Professor
Bye.
Carol Swain teaches political science and law at Vanderbilt University. She's author of a book called The New White Nationalism in America. Connection listeners, and there are a number of you, hang on the phones. We'll be talking to you when we come back after the break with Governor Wilder. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from NPR. With me on the program today, Governor Douglas Wilder, former governor of Virginia, founder and chairman of a board of directors of the National Slavery Museum, which is now slated to open in Fredericksburg, Virginia, in the year 2007. Connection listeners, we're taking your calls about what the museum can do, what it should do. Let's go first to Raleigh, North Carolina. Mike's on the line. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I am from Virginia, and my family has been in Virginia since the 1600s. They were slaveholders. And I think what Governor Wilder is doing is so important, because we hear people talk today about the South as if it's this monolithic thing, and they talk about, you know, the Confederate flag, et cetera, and it's not about hate, it's about tradition, et cetera. But you can't write or even talk in any meaningful way about the history of the South without talking about the history of slavery. And
is that missing, Mike? Is that glossed over? Do you find either in your education or your kids' education or in conversation that it's a part of American history that's not talked about the way it should be?
Exactly. I went to divinity school here at Duke, and we had a course in African American church studies. And, of course, we talked about slavery, and our professor, an African-American man, one of the things he was at pains to model for the group was, look, guys, there's enough responsibility to go around, but we've got to get close enough to this to be able to talk about it. I think what Governor Wilder is doing is so important, and I think it's very unfortunate that the governor and the professor are having this public debate about this in the way that it's happening, because unfortunately it fuels the the forces for division. What we know is that slavery oppressed everybody, and apparently it still does, if we can't even talk about it. But I absolutely support what the governor is doing. Unfortunately, I was not living in Virginia at the time he ran for governor, but if I had been, I certainly would have voted for him.
Well, I needed every vote, I can tell you that. Thank you very much.
You bet.
All right, Mike, thanks a lot for your call.
1-800-423-8255.
Let's go next to Nashville, Tennessee. Washington's joining us. Hi, Washington.
Hi, this is Washington Butler calling. I'm not an authority on anything. I'm 70 years old, and I'm originally from Louisiana. I want to commend also Dr. Wilder, Governor Wilder, on the effort that he and others are making to establish the National Slavery Museum. My grandfather was a slave. However, the only whom I did not know, but the only thing I remember about my father talking about his father was the whippings that they received.
That's right. Same here, Mike. Wash. That's the same thing.
I had a cousin who was lynched, and whenever, as a little boy, whenever I would ask, nobody would say anything. I'd like to know what happened to my cousin.
Why do you suppose, Washington, people didn't or don't want to talk about it?
Well, as far as people in the family, they were afraid because the sheriff, who was white, was supposed to have been involved in putting this boy on the train tracks to pretend that a train had run over him when he had actually been killed a considerable distance from the tracks. And they just were afraid to talk about it because they thought the sheriff would come back and get them. And that fear
but
is not gone
so
yet.
So long ago. That's the part about it that I want you to try and help bridge for me that did happen a long time ago. And you're
that's
saying
right.
to me that the fear's still there.
Oh yes, oh yes. Because to tell you the truth, I'm 70 years old, and I went through the 60s, and I was very much involved. But at the same time, I could think about what happened to my cousin. Okay? By denying the past, we distort the future. We need to know the past.
So tell the governor what you'd like to see in a National Slavery Museum.
I'd like to see all the things that he mentioned earlier, but I'd like to see an investigative on that researches anecdotal stories like I just told you. For example, have you read the 100 Years of Lynching?
Is that the book of photographs that came out a couple of years ago? No.
No,
no.
It's a collection of newspaper articles, just newspaper articles with no editorial.
I've not seen it.
It was banned in the South.
Yes, I've seen it.
Okay, Dr. Wilder, I thought you probably would have. But what I'm trying to get at is that these kinds of things, this is a wealth of information that writers could write about, television producers could produce about. Poets could write about, you know. We only understand history by looking backward. We need to know what happened. Now, I don't have, and let me say again also, I don't have any problem with Dr. Swain. She has a valid, legitimate opinion and a position that she takes, and I commend her for it. I just disagree, you know.
And you've expressed that for me, too. Let me just say that you will find the Dr. Swains, and she's not by herself in that regard, because sometimes, for some reason, there has been this thinking that we all ought to be in groupthink. We all have to think alike, talk alike, walk alike, act alike. Some people have made it very profitable for themselves to show that they're not in that think alike, group-like, groupthink mentality. And I'm not saying that Dr. Swain is one of them, but she's an author of a book that obviously suggests that, you know, look, I'm a different person. I made it on my own. Look, you've got so many people in this community, so many people that have not drawn a dime worth of welfare, sacrificed and scrambled for themselves and have made it through their bootstraps. The question is, have we lived up to the American dream, this precept of our nation? And that's what King was talking about. America should live up to its precepts.
The point that Washington's making, though, that I'd like to hear you speak about, Governor, is that there isn't just one way of telling the story, and that if the museum supports scholarship, that looks back and then looks back again and looks back in the same way that historians are looking back today, thousands of years, at what happened.
Well, precisely in terms of education, and I didn't ever get a chance to explain this to Dr. Swain, we are going to have what I would call consortiums with various institutions to provide opportunities for research and fellowship at the museum, for people to come and study there, for students to come and learn there. Then they can do their own writing. They can do their own disseminating. We want it to be a research database for people to learn. It could indeed prompt some of the things that he's speaking about in terms of looking at very anecdotal things and carrying it further. But you have to have the germ. You have to have the kernel. This is what we have. Now, if there is something existing in America today that provides that, I'd like to know where it is and what it is.
Let's go back to the phone lines. Washington, thanks for your call. To Boston now. John's on the line. Hi, John.
Hi. Thanks for putting me on.
Yeah.
I want to applaud this museum. I think it's wonderful. I think it's fabulous. I, as an American, I'm not an African-American, but I, as an American, attribute all the privileges that I have in this country and the greatness of this country to the labor of slaves who, you know, you don't become a great and powerful nation. You certainly don't become the most powerful nation in the world if not for the sacrifice they made. And I think they're the greatest heroes in history. I don't see any other, there's certainly no greater, in my opinion, human rights violation than what occurred with slaves. And I think the key to us becoming a race-friendly country and at peace with racial tensions is recognizing the greatness. People like Nat Turner, people like Richard Allen, these are the heroes of America, and they need to be recognized. How many people even know those names, and how long will we let their, allow their sacrifice to go in vain without the recognition that's long overdue then?
Do you have any reservations, any thoughts, John, that a museum like this could awaken some of the other side of the story, not the thanks and that you're expressing, but some of the racism that still exists in the country?
It's hard for me to see that it could do more harm than good.
That already is being done.
That's right. And I think that aside, even if it does bring out negative repercussions, it's owed these people. I mean, if we were to say that the people who sacrificed 911 should not be recognized for their acts of heroism, we would be in shock.
You're not looking, then, John, you're not looking for a reminder or a reflection of those people or that time. You're looking for a museum like this to be something of a reassessment, then.
Something of an honor and a tribute to the great Americans, and that's just what they are, and that's what they should be remembered as.
Well, Governor, this is we're piling up a lot of responsibility.
Well, I understand that, but I do think that you beg a question when you ask several of the people who come on, and that is, would it not reignite some of the passions of the past in people? How can that happen? And I'm just speaking about the physical act of how that happens, because you learn about what history was. Then that makes you more bitter?
Well, let me give you an example. At the Museum of the Confederacy in Richmond, Virginia, there is a cat of nine tails hanging on the wall, and that is the sort of central part of their acknowledgement of slavery. And I haven't been there. I've only read about this, so you have to forgive me an academic retelling of that. But in the articles that I read on it in preparation for this conversation, there are people who say, you know, they haven't got it right. They haven't spent enough time at that museum acknowledging slavery. Couldn't the same thing happen with a new museum?
Well, I've just asked you to give me an example. You haven't done it. You're talking about a cat of nine tails used by some people on slaves. Mm-hmm. You tell me how you can name a single fact. And I'm not debating you. I'm not arguing with you. I'm just wanting to be educated myself. You name a single thing that an exposure to history would make that would cause people to be more truculent, more mean-spirited, and more evil. Tell me what you think it could be.
Well, let's talk about the Confederate battle emblem. It means one thing to one group of people in this country, and it means something very different to people, to other people in the country.
Very
I mean,
very glad you mentioned that. That Confederate battle emblem was placed on the sleeves of the Virginia Air National Guard while I was governor. I was not aware of it until it was brought to my attention. I issued an executive order. It was removed overnight. There has not been the slightest recrimination as a result thereof, because it was wrong to have been there in the first instance.
But how does it stand as an example of two different interpretations of the same time of history?
It's not two different interpretations. This is the Virginia Air National Guard. We fight for the American flag, not the Confederate flag. It had no business being on there. No one could make argument with that. Even the Virginia newspaper, leading newspaper, the Richmond Times-Dispatch, agreed that it had to go and should have gone. That wasn't an act of heroism on my part, but I'm still trying to find out what it is about the exposure to knowing about slavery and becoming educated about it that would set things back. Set what back? What great progress have we made that we are walking on eggshells about, oh, don't say this, don't do that, because it might make somebody be upset with you. About facts that we had nothing at all to do with in contriving or bringing about. It was not for us to make. It was already made. History has shown that. And to the extent that we don't learn from our history, I agree with one of the previous callers, we are doomed to repeat it. We are not going to forget our involvement. We are not going to allow this nation to forget that it is a nation that was founded, pretty much so, on the labor of a lot of people who have never been recognized other than the faceless, amorphous groups of persons who may have come from other shores, but never, ever recognized as Americans.
Governor Wilder, it's been a pleasure listening to you make your case.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for being
with us. I hope I've made a case for America.
Oh, I think you have. Governor Douglas Wilder, former governor of Virginia. Earlier in the program, we talked with Professor Carol Swain from Vanderbilt University. Connection listeners, we invite you to our website at theconnection.org, our forum section, if you'd like to exchange views with other listeners about the subject of our show today. We had help with this program from Kim Bichari, Dara Manoogian, Brian Myers, and Carl Volker. Our program is produced by Sean Carberry, Sarah Field, Elaine Grant, Gail Harris, Kelly Jones, Orit Karitsky-Fox, Lindsay Miller, Christina Russo, and Doug Sugertz. Our interns are Andrea Liebman and Lisa Ruffino. Our senior producer is Tara Murphy. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.